show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a baseball prospectus affiliate. Folks, we got some Royals baseball to talk about. Exciting, more exciting Royals baseball. But first, introductions. I, of course, am Jeff Herr. With me, as always, the always effervescent Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this evening?
I'm all right. Busy week last week. This week not as busy. I'm okay with that.
Hey, you know, less busy weeks are always fun.
Right. I get paid the same, so.
Yeah, exactly. The less busy, the better.
Right.
Unless it gets too less busy, and then it's
bad. Right. Then you start to worry about things. But
yes.
So far, that's not an issue.
An appropriate amount of busyness.
Right.
So as long as that is going well. So we'll just kind of jump right in here. We've got some news items to discuss that are kind of interesting in terms of the Royals' future as they make this surge, or Royals' future, their immediate future, as they try and continue this surge towards first place in the division. So they have we'll start with Danny Duffy, who has made a rehab start in Omaha. And appears to be on track. I think they said they're going to give him two more rehab starts at least. And then at that point, I think they're assuming everything goes okay. I think they'll bring him back to the team. So you're looking at maybe 2 weeks from now, maybe a little over, before we see Danny Duffy start another game, which would put us, you know, past the All-Star break and past, obviously July 4th weekend, and then give you a couple weeks to kind of feel things out before the trade deadline. You think that's a realistic timeline for Duffy? I mean, I think that's kind of right on the nose in terms of what they were predicting for. I can't remember the exact date that he went out, but as far as with how long they said he would be out, it's kind of right in that time frame. So you think that's what's going to happen, or do you think they'll try and give him a little bit more extra time? What do you think's going to go down with that?
I'm not sure. I mean, when he went down, it looked like he was going to be coming back just before the trade deadline. If they go through and they give him two or three more rehab starts, he might be a week or two early, relative to at least, like, they said 6 to 8 weeks. So that might end up being something that he comes back a little bit early. They're not really pushing him. He only threw 40 pitches, or, you know, he was only scheduled to throw 40 pitches in that rehab start. They don't want to put too much on him, especially when it's an oblique injury. And, you know, if you tweak those again, you can run into some issues. So I don't think that there's a whole lot of trouble with that. But, he seems like he's feeling all right. In typical Danny Duffy fashion, he was acting like, oh, I could go out and throw, you know, seven innings tomorrow. And I was like, okay, settle down. Just chill
out.
Put
the baseball down.
But, you know, when you look at, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, that's 2 months that, you know, he last pitched in the big leagues on the 29th of May. So if he's able to come back a week or two earlier from that, that one signals, okay, his health should be good. And I think the Royals have enough incentive to not rush him because they do have him on a long-term deal. But also, you know, just because if you do rush him back and he gets hurt, you know, that's pretty much it. You know, it's pretty much done for the year, just because you don't want to continue to try to aggravate this stuff and work it back. at a certain point, you just run out of time. So I think if he's pitching well now and he ends up, you know, making the same number of rehab starts and there are no setbacks, he's able to add 15 to 20 pitches per time out. That would put him in line for, you know, a couple weeks from now. He's ready to come back. There's also All-Star breaks mixed into that, so that may push a couple of the appearances back a couple of days. But for the most part, yeah, I feel pretty comfortable where he's at. And considering where the Royals are at and where, you know, it looked like they might be at when he went out, you know, they've really played well in June, and he's going to be coming back to, you know, hopefully over the next 3 to 4 weeks, a team that will still be playing well and looking at playoff contention. And that's a pretty nice arm to get back just in time for the final stretch of the last 2 months of the season. So, you know, hopefully there's no setbacks, but it was definitely good to at least get him back on a mound, get him throwing again, and, you know, just see what he can do. He did give up a home run, but it was a home run to Randall Grichuk, who the next day was called back up to the Cardinals. You know, he was down in, like, A-ball and Double-A, just getting his swing right. You know, very much a legit major leaguer. So it's like, all right, it's not like he gave up a homer to some Triple-A journeyman. It was, you know, it was a real player. Not that the other guys aren't, but, you know, just, you know, it was a legit guy that hit a home run off of him.
Yeah, a major league player.
Yeah, not too worried about Duffy giving up a homer. He struck out three. He walked one. You know, control seemed to be all right through, you know, he could have thrown more strikes, only 28 out of it looks like 48 pitches. But, you know, it's his first time back on the mound in about a month.
And a lot of it, especially when you come back to your first rehab start after an absence like this, kind of like spring training. You know, you're not necessarily going out there with, you know, after studying film on all the hitters and trying to figure out what your sequencing is you're probably working on certain things. He's like, okay, I want to make sure my fastball command feels good. I want to make sure switching from fastball to curveball, you know, in sequential pitches, or fastball to slider, or whatever, changeup, you know, whatever the case may be, that, you know, that transition feels good, that all my pitches, when they're mixed together and everything, feels okay with my arm and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, there's a ton of different factors that go in. So, yeah, a home run, you know, maybe he's working on his curveball, trying to do it in a certain place, and Grichuk was expecting a curveball, and Duffy didn't care, and they get through it, and then it was, you know. So
it's not about the results, especially in your first one back. It's
right.
Get yourself right. You know, the only thing that you would maybe worry about results wise would be if he had thrown, like, you know, 10 strikes and 40 pitches and walked everybody and went Rick Ankiel on everybody. Then you'd be like, something went wrong. Then you might worry. But, you know, anything else, it's not a big deal. The results, and I would say in the next rehab start, shouldn't worry too much about the results. By the third, he might be dialing it up to normal speed. So then you might want to see kind of something. But even then, you know, if all he's doing is getting the feel for a pitch, making sure he can repeat his delivery and throw strikes, if they hit a strike, big deal. I mean, it's a rehab start. It's all about just getting healthy and getting conditioned back up. So, you know, I would say pay attention to it, but, you know, don't get carried away. We don't need to dissect every little thing. It's you know, just about getting healthy.
Absolutely. And just hearing him having pitched is always a good sign. So, Duff, and as the Royals near the trade deadline, you know, as every team nears the trade deadline, it's – you've got that kind of in your back pocket if you're the Royals organization right now. You're thinking, you know, whatever our situation is, if we want to make a – if you were to make a move, well, getting Danny Duffy back is almost kind of like making a move in and of itself. I mean, this great run they've gone on has been without him. So if they can get another pitcher, and now that the offense is going and they've got, you know, things rolling much better than when he got injured, if they can – keep that going and then just add a pitcher like Duffy, it's basically like they went out and got a frontline starting pitcher anyway. So you know, that's kind of a positive way of looking at the fact that he's been injured and they've been able to have this run while he's been out. And I think it's going to be the these next couple weeks waiting for Duffy to get back. I mean, very well could determine the season, really, if we're looking at it. And because, you know, they're playing Detroit right now as we record this on Wednesday night, June 28th. So
they have a lead. They have the fourth inning. So
yes,
fingers crossed we won't jinx this time.
Yeah, and they lost last night. Matt Strom continues to struggle, not mightily, but he struggled last night and gave up a big three-run homer to Miguel Cabrera. I mean, there's not a ton of shame in that. He's gonna no. he's gonna get you because he's one of the best hitters in history, really. So, you know, unfortunately, though, it was a three-run homer and not a solo shot because he allowed a couple guys on base. Next thing you know, the Royals, they had a 3-0 lead, and then it dwindled, and then it was gone, and they lost. And that was their second straight loss after a really good stretch. They had popped up above 500 at 37 and 36 when they took the second of the three game series that they played against Toronto this past weekend, lost the final game against Toronto, lost last night against Detroit, and so now they're back under 500. And Detroit's not very good, and they played Verlander last night, and Miguel Cabrera hit a home run. So those are the types of things that happen sometimes when you play Detroit, and they still have those great players in the team, but they really need to win these next two games. You got to win the series against Detroit because you want to be in as good a position as possible for this coming weekend when you've got a four game series against Minnesota, which could be the biggest series of the year. And, you know, you say those things and it's like, okay, well, at this point, right? And, you know, of course, on one hand, but it also could be the biggest series of the year, regardless of whatever happens. Even though if they're, you know, fighting for a playoff spot down the stretch, you know. If they win the next two against Detroit, they're 39 and 38. Right now, Minnesota is 39 and 36, I believe, is their record. So if they, you know, depending on what they do, the Royals in a four-game series, whether they win three or four games, they could overtake Minnesota in the division. So there's your situation, right? You've got two teams, maybe you're a half game, maybe a game apart going into a four game series. And if the Royals win three games or four games of those series, if they were to sweep all four games, which would be amazing, then you're making up a ton of ground in the division. Not only are you overlapping Minnesota, but at that point you're putting a couple games distance between you. And then you're making up, something good just happened. We'll talk to that in a minute. But
breaking news.
Finish my thought here. but at that point, you know, then you're coming, and Cleveland's only 40 and 36 right now. So you've got the Royals are 2.5 games behind them. So if you were to win three or four games against Minnesota, not only are you leapfrogging them and maybe even putting a game or two distance between you, but you're coming up on Cleveland really hard as well. So the flip side of that is if they lay an egg and they go 1-3 or get swept by Minnesota, then all of a sudden, you know, playing out the scenario, if they were to win the next two against Detroit and they're 39 and 38, they lose four, then they're 39 and 42. They're going to be 4.5 games at least, or they're probably, you know, somewhere between 4 and 6 games behind Minnesota, and then probably somewhere 6 to 8 games behind Cleveland. And then right after that, they go on a West Coast swing where they play Seattle, who is another team that's right there in the wild card race with the Royals. And then they play the Dodgers, who may be the best team in baseball.
They are very good at the baseballing.
Very good at the baseballing. So, I mean, So if they don't take care of business against Minnesota, then they've got a tough six-game road trip. Things could get bad really quick, and it might not matter when Danny Duffy gets back. And the flip side is that if they do take care of business against Minnesota, and then they have an opportunity going to Seattle to take care of business against them, and you put your – so in a 10-game stretch here, you could make a ton of noise in the division, and you could separate yourself a little bit in the wild card race from another wild card contender, which is Seattle, who's I haven't checked their record, but they're essentially the same as the Royals.
Yeah, they're 39-41.
So
entering tonight.
Yeah, so they're essentially the same as the Royals, and so you're looking at, you know, more distance between them, and then of course the Dodgers are going to be tough, but so. These next 10 days or so gonna go a long way towards trying to figure out how this Royals team is going to go, or this Royals season is going to go. But before we move on to any other news topics, breaking news. Mike Moustakas just homered. He actually – this is back-to-back home runs.
Oh, okay. See, I saw the Sal Perez home run. I didn't see the Mike Moustakas home run.
Yeah, I just got an update on my phone. So Sal Perez hit a home run, a two-run shot to make it 3-0, and Mike Moustakas hit a home run. Normally, you know, it's not – we don't really care for the play-by-play on the podcast because it won't be relevant by the time you hear it. But it is relevant. No. because we all know that with Mike Moustakas, that is home run number 20 on the season for Mike Moustakas already. And now we have to do the Balboni Watch update. So
Balboni Watch. We really ought to record something for that.
We need to.
A drop, as they would say in the in radio base. Parlance.
Yes. So this is the 69th game for Mike Moustakas. So
nice.
Let's pull up. See, I wasn't even prepared for this because Moose hadn't hit a home run since we last recorded. So there wasn't really a Balboni update. Other than to say that he hadn't hit a home run, but now here we are.
He did things years ago.
Now, yes, 32 years ago. So anyway, here we go. Let's pull it up. Game 69. game 69. Why is it not doing the thing? Well, you know, in Baseball Reference, you can, you know, you can highlight a set of games and it'll give you the summary. Mm-hmm. But it's not doing that.
Yeah, that's been really iffy when I've tried to use it. It's not.
Well, there we go. It popped up. It must have just been delayed or something.
Yeah.
Okay, 69 games. Interestingly enough, that 85 Rose team was only 36-33 at that time. But I guess that's the team 69 games. I don't know if it says anything. Anyway. So I guess let's be consistent here. So 75 games, right? Or 70? This is 76th game tonight. So we'll go through the 76th game of the season to see where Balboni was here for the team. 76. Here we are. Okay, 76 games. So the Royals were actually they were 39-37 in 1985. That's interesting. I knew they had like a big stretch where they really made a lot of ground.
Yeah.
I didn't realize this time of the year. So the Royals are actually only a couple games worse than that team was. That's beside the point. Steve Balboni, as of game 76, had 13 home runs. Okay? So now we're talking Mike Moustakas has 20. And Salvador Perez with that one, what does he have, 16 now?
16, yep.
16. So we have two players on this Kansas City Royals team that are not just on pace, not just ahead, at least in terms of home runs by game, or by X number of game, but they are on pace. Two players that are looking to break this record. I mean, let's do the math here. If let's see, as an accountant, I can give you very good. I do the maths.
Great through. Numbers. So, the best.
Start with Perez. The best. 16 home runs, 76 games, 0.21 home runs per game. That's a pace for 34 home runs. So he's just off the pace in terms of a per game average, but he has more home runs than Balboni did at this point. Now, Moustakas. He is on pace for 42 home runs, for shattering Balboni's record. And that actually, 42 home runs is significant because if that's the case, if Moustakas holds that pace and hits 42 home runs, then the Royals will actually catapult themselves to 29th on the list of franchise home run record holders. I don't know the best way to say this to make it clear, but the point is
home runs hit in a single season
for a
home run record setting year.
But what I'm trying to say is the Mets, Carlos Beltran for the Mets hit 41 home runs, and that's the next closest to the Royals. So if Moose hits 42, the Royals will leapfrog the Mets in terms of franchise single-season home run record holders, and then they will no longer be the lowest total in Major League history for a franchise single-season record holder. How about that? That'd be something, wouldn't it?
I would enjoy that.
I would enjoy that greatly. I always enjoy beating the Mets, so beating them even if it's not on the field and something else is fine by me. So that is pretty darn cool. And Sal Perez, even though he's not quite on the pace, like his per game average has to be much higher because he's probably not played as many games as Balboni had at that point. I don't want to bore the listeners with trying to determine what the actual numbers break down to, but both of them. Moose is on pace on a per-game average, and Perez isn't quite on pace, but he is further along than where Balboni himself was in that fateful season. So that's pretty cool. Fun stuff. Hopefully the Royals can hold this 4-run lead that they've got on the Tigers here, even though we're recording.
4-run? Hey. 5
runs. Oh, right. That's right. Alex Gordon just hit it. I got that notification as well. 5-run lead. So hopefully they can hold on. Maybe we should just stop recording.
Right, I know. Now. They're just really – no, as soon as we stop recording, they're going to give up 7 runs in the bottom of the inning. That's how this works.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what the lead is. They lose it by the time – I don't know what it is. Ever since like middle of last year.
I don't get it.
I think the Royals are like 2-30. I don't know how many episodes we recorded, but they just don't win when we're recording. Anyway, we'll see if that changes.
Yes, let's hope it does. And so Balboni watch. Steve Balboni, they're circling your neighborhood. Balboni, be ready. What is he doing nowadays? He's like a scout or something, isn't he?
Yeah, he was. He's one of the advanced scouts for the Giants.
Giants. That's right.
Yeah, I remember you saw him a lot in the 2014 World Series.
Yep.
And
I knew that.
I know he's still with them. So
good for him. But that'd be – I don't know how you could work it out. It'd be tough, I guess. But if you could have him there when the record is broken, like it's one of those things that's like – it's pathetic kind of if you're – you know, if you're a Yankees fan and you're like, what? Come on. But – as a Royals fan, it's only funny to Royals fans, but that would be damn funny and awesome if they had Balboni. Like, maybe do a video board message like Hank Aaron did when Barry Bonds broke the record. You know, let's embrace how shitty this record is that it would finally fall. If it does, I'm not getting too ahead of myself here.
Sure.
I hope the Royals take advantage of an opportunity to really endear themselves to fans. If Moose starts to get close, just make it happen.
Well, by the time we get to that point, the Giants aren't going to be doing anything anyway. So
that's true. They're not going to be doing anything right now.
No, they're not going to be doing anything in September. It's an odd year. Come on.
Exactly. Just be like, hey, can I have some time off and head on over there?
Done. I just need a week to hang out with Mike Moustakas.
Yep. I'm gonna have to follow him around the country. And just in case he breaks the record at any point in time, let's see.
Now I just imagine an overhead map, like like this little Moustakas in a car going to, I don't know, wherever they're going, Cleveland or Minnesota or whatever, just driving, and this little Balboni following him,
yeah.
Like
That's pretty funny.
Or like the Indiana Jones airplane dotted line thing. And
oh, yep. It sucks that they, because they actually did play the Giants this year, but that those series are done, so they're not playing them. If only they could have switched out the last series of the year of Arizona with it. But then, of course, all you know, if all things go well, the record would be broken before then anyway.
He's going to hit number 40 off of Zach Greinke.
Oh, how poetic that would be.
That would be nice.
That'd be pretty cool. But anyway, I guess we were... We got sidetracked there with the Balboni watch, but we can
darn homers killing rallies,
killing them rallies. But we can bring it back into the topic at hand. Some news items that we had. So we talked about Duffy. The came out today that Chesler Cuthbert will be moving to take a stint on the DL with a left wrist sprain. And Jorge Soler has been called up to replace him. He was actually in the lineup tonight that we record as the DH spot. So Soler in AAA had quite a good time. He had very good stretch down there.
Like 31 games, really, and he hit 11 homers in 31 games.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yes,
pretty strong pace.
Just a bit.
He slugged .667 in his time there. There was even a game where he tied the game with a home run in like the eighth inning, and then he hit a walk-off home run, grand slam even, in the bottom of the 10th. So in the span of two innings, he drove in like six runs.
Didn't get much better than that, you know?
That's pretty strong. You know, hit .324, which is pretty good. He still struck out like 32 times in 31 games, so that's... not good, but he walked
less
23
than ideal,
times.
But yeah.
You know, he walked basically every game, too, and hit a homer every third game. So, you know, you can live with that. And by, you know, other accounts, but you know, Clint Scholes said that he was working really hard, doing a lot more hustling, really kind of impressing the staff down there. Some of the AAA announcers up there, they've seen them on Twitter. They've kind of mentioned similar things. So it seems like he was ready to kind of come back. They've been in this kind of weird spot where Bonifacio has been hitting well enough to stay. And, you know, really, I think the original plan was they were going to have Bonifacio way back in, what, May or whenever he came up, just kind of play it out for a bit, you know, just because he had deserved a shot after a good start in AAA himself. And then Soler came up and just didn't really do much, and Bonifacio basically won playing time from him. And Soler was on the bench for so long that they needed to send him down and give him an opportunity to actually play every day and actually, you know, improve his skills. And, you know, in Omaha, he at least proved that it was a worthwhile idea. And, you know, he's got two strikeouts tonight, so that's not good. But... You know, I think it's good to at least see him go down, hit well, play well, and earn a chance to come back. Cuthbert hadn't been playing well, and if he's been hurt for a little while, then that would explain a lot of it. But he really hasn't had playing time. And right now, Soler will probably get some playing time, either spelling guys in the outfield or just hitting at DH, because Brandon Moss has been just miserable to the
just
point
off.
That – fans are ready to just cut him loose. Not just, you know, a lot of fans are ready to cut anybody loose. They're ready to cut Herrera loose. They're ready to cut Soria loose, you know, because they walk one guy or something. So not you guys, not our listeners. Our listeners are a lot more reasonable than that. But, you know,
yes,
others. You know where to find them.
Yes.
Let's face
mainly,
the music.
Mainly
and,
Twitter.
And you can find them. But, yeah, Moss has not been good, and the Royals really don't have much of a choice but to keep him around on the roster. But Soler can at least play in front of him and, you know, gives him the opportunity to kind of earn some playing time back and maybe, you know, you get the season back after a pretty rough start. So, you know, injuries, and then he didn't hit well when he did come back. But he hit well in Omaha and, so yeah, it's, I'm happy for him. Happy to see him get the opportunity, and Hopefully it pays off. Hopefully they don't just platoon those guys, because I think Soler probably would benefit by playing every day as often as they can do it where it makes sense. Yeah. So we'll kind of see. Hopefully he gets a hit today to kind of, you know, shake off the cobwebs and maybe take some pressure off himself so he doesn't get up, strike out a bunch, and say, oh, well, here we go again. That would be disappointing.
Yeah, and it's good when you see a player like him who has some struggles. He goes down to AAA, and he just dominates. You know, that's what you want to see. You want to see him be too good for the level. You know, maybe not to say that necessarily automatically equates to success at the major league level, and it doesn't. But just the idea that okay. He's too good for this level, you know, because I heard some talk on the radio today about like Bubba Starling and what are the odds of him coming up to play at the major league level this season. And he's had a good last month or so, a pretty good stretch, especially for him. But, I mean, you're still talking at an overall level of him. He's sitting like 185 or something at AAA, and it's really hard to say, oh, yeah, you deserve a shot at the bigs when you can't even hit the Mendoza line in AAA. Mm-hmm. So that's a difficult proposition. But when you see someone like Soler come down and you say, okay, you've had your time, you've figured out some things, you're dominating at this level, let's bring you back up, let's see if you can take what you learned. And, yeah, I did hear, you know, a lot of the things you were talking about, you know, that, oh, he's changed up some things. And actually heard before we started recording, I was listening to the pregame show on the TV. And, wow, that sounded – that just made me sound like, well, didn't I?
The way
I said that on the TV, on the television.
Watching my stories.
But I heard Joel Goldberg say he talked to him. And, you know, he mentioned that he kind of tweaked some things with his swing. He kind of – just try to take a different approach, and it helped him kind of work through some things, and he feels more comfortable now. He feels more like himself was the quote that Joel Goldberg said about Soler and kind of where he feels as of today coming back up to the majors for the first time in a little bit. So, you know, hopefully that translates. And, yeah, he's not off to a great start, had being 0-2 and all that, but, you know, hopefully that'll turn around. And as you mentioned, it's been easy to just kind of let him be down in the minors because Jorge Bonifacio has been doing so well. Excuse me. And as a player, he, you know, even today so far, he's 0-2 as well, but he's got a walk. I mean, I continue to be impressed with the skill set that Bonifacio has displayed. I mean, he's not necessarily, you know, he's got 11 home runs now, which is really good, considering he's only played 56 games.
Right.
And, you know, his slash line isn't something that's you're gonna just go nuts about. But I mean, he's at, 785 OPS. Like, that's pretty good. So when that's what you're looking at, and you know, his defense is suspect. It's probably not as terrible.
He's not going to win a Gold Glove.
No, and he and Soler are probably in the same spot. It's not as terrible probably as people would lead you to believe, but they're going to make some really big, dumb looking blunders probably that makes everyone think that they're terrible. Right. But if you really look at it over the course of the season, they won't be as bad as people say. But they definitely won't be, you know, more of a liability than an asset out in right field, I guess you could say, for some accounting lingo there for you. But, you know, there's a lot of – but to back to Bonifacio, it's just I'm continue to be impressed from the – you know, he's had pretty solid plate discipline. You know, you'd like to see him walk a little bit more, but, you know, he's still young. He's had a greater than 10% walk rate for most of his career in the minors. And, you know, he's at 8% right now looking at his stats, and he's still K-ing about – that's all right. You know, you'd like to be close to that 10% range, and he's still K-ing at 26%. So hopefully you can bring that number down. But most positive aspect is his BABIP is 302 currently. So that's right at average, you know. And So his line, he's hitting 254, 318, 467 with 11 home runs. You know, it's there's the definite possibility that pitchers are still trying to figure him out and may adjust to him, and that could hurt him later. But at least in terms of batted ball percentages, it's not some smoke and mirror thing where he just happens to be on a hot stretch where he's hitting like 365 BABIP or something and you expect his average to drop down. You know, this could be the kind of hitter that he is. If he's a 250, 320, 460 type hitter, I mean, even with his somewhat suspect defense, he can be that's a really valuable player. I mean, have you been as impressed with – and just to qualify – me being impressed with him is more so based on kind of the fanfare he received when he came up, which is to say not very much. You know, it was just kind of like, well, here's a guy, we need a spot filled.
Here's Jorge Fazio.
Exactly. You know?
He's been assistant for 38 years. Meh.
Yeah, exactly. He's remember Emilio Bonifacio? He's his younger brother. So that's fun fact. But, you know, considering all that and how – seems like his whole career, people have been kind of downplaying. When he's already had a good year, people have been kind of downplaying him and saying, like, oh, he probably doesn't project more as a fourth outfielder or whatever at the major league level. And that could still be what he is. But, I mean, do you share my impressions, or are you a little bit more lukewarm than I am?
I think probably where he's at now is about where he'll probably be maybe for a couple of years, and then we'll see if there's any kind of a breakout. But you know, for someone that a couple of years ago I didn't really think that much about just because he just wasn't rising like he thought he would, to see him come up and handle the level and handle himself, you know, 8% walk rate for a rookie is pretty okay. He does strike out a lot, but I do think he's got a decent judgment of the strike zone. So I don't think it's that he's chasing necessarily. I think it's just that, you know, he's still got some holes to kind of work on. But you can definitely see the strength. I mean, he's got 11 home runs now. Last year, we talked about Jorge Soler. Jorge Soler hit 12 homers, and that's his career high in the big leagues. So for all the prestigious power that Soler has, and it's legit like 70 power when he connects, you know, it hasn't translated to real results in the field. So you know, when you look at Bonifacio, he's maybe a little more of a complete hitter today, maybe. I don't know. You know, there are things that kind of annoy me by him sometimes. He seems to kind of check swing or half swing a lot, I notice. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know if maybe that's just that he's guessing and guessing wrong. But, you know, a guy who can hit home runs like he has can make enough contact to, you know, not be in the 210s, 220s. You know, I think that's fine. And, you know, if he can just be average or close to it in right field, he's got enough arm to play that position. So, you know, it's pretty impressive. You know, he's, you know, 23, 24 years old now. Still room to grow. You know, he's kind of at this point maybe getting figured out a little bit. But he had a stretch in May for about a week where he was not really hitting that well, and he adjusted from that. So I think he might go through and have some bumps, but I think ultimately he'll probably be able to stick at this level, you know, the rest of the season. He'll probably go on like an 0-for-30 slump now, but yeah, I mean, he's been perfectly fine. I mean, he's been basically, I think, what you thought we would be getting in Soler.
Yes,
season.
Absolutely.
You know, if you'd have said on April 3rd, well, not April 3rd because Soler would have been on the DL, but if you'd have said, you know, in early March, okay, on June 28th, Jorge Soler is going to be hitting 250 and he'll have 11 home runs. Be like, great. That's awesome. That's fine.
And take it.
I think Bonifacio has basically kind of done what you expected there and – you know, has kind of filled in kind of admirably for Soler. So if he can adjust and kind of, you know, be back around hitting 270, add some value and still have that power and Soler back from Omaha can hit, that really strengthens this lineup quite a lot. So Excited to kind of see both of those guys get some opportunities. I mean, we'll, again, remains to be seen how they'll use Soler, you know, full time with Moss. If they do want to do a straight up platoon, you know, you might not see Soler that often at DH, or maybe, you know, against select righties. But, you know, Bonifacio's playing well enough to stay in right field basically full time. You might rotate Soler, get an off day or something, maybe, you know, have Soler playing left to give Alex Gordon an off day, or have Alex Gordon DH, give him half an off day. You know, I don't know. But it does give them some flexibility to have Bonifacio playing well, you know, and really, for how long were the Royals looking for a right fielder from their system after they traded Will Myers? Forever. And so now they finally have kind of gotten one. So that's kind of nice to see for this season, and, you know, interested to see over the next 3 months kind of where that goes.
Absolutely. It'll be a fun little thing to watch, you know, because we've talked about this in years past and haven't really talked about it recently, but, you know, we've brought up the Cardinals as an organization that for much of the 2000s seems to just bring these guys out of nowhere that no one had no herald coming up from the minor leagues, and but yet turn out to be very valuable players for their team. And you know, the Royals have kind of done it a little bit over the past few years, mostly with the relievers. But, you know, now with Whit Merrifield coming up and him, you know, kind of sticking around with his ability to, you know, he had the long hit streak and he's kind of cooled off since then, but he's still, you know, proving that he can compete at this level. And then if Jorge Bonifacio continues what he's doing, you know, there's a couple guys that people are going to be like, who the hell are these guys? But they're both hitting, you know, above league average, playing, you know, decent enough defense, being contributing members of this team. That's a huge positive for the organization. And we've talked a lot recently about how weak the Royals farm system is, but when you can get stuff that from players that you didn't really expect it, you know, that's a huge plus. So that could, you know, that'll be a fun little storyline to watch as the Royals continue to try and surge towards the top of this division here. And, you know, how that impacts what could happen in the future. You know, if you've got Jorge Bonifacio and then Jorge Soler, if he's able to right the ship and get things going again, then you've got three solid outfielders for next year. You know, granted, you're going to have to make some compromises on defense because, you know, Gordon's probably going to move to center if Lorenzo Cain leaves. And then you've got Bonifacio and Soler at right field and left field, which isn't ideal. But from an offensive standpoint, you know, that's defensively. From an offensive standpoint, then at least at the corners, you know, Gordon is still a question mark at this point. But at the corners, you know, that's at least somewhat positive. You know, it's better than some years they've been.
Yeah, you got two guys who could hit 20 homers in both outfield corners. It's fine.
Yeah,
you're going to be completely comfortable with that.
Yeah, you're going to take that for sure.
And if Soler ever figures it out, 30 homers and, from him.
Yeah, it becomes that kind of a guy.
I mean, that's even better. What his power can bring, but he's just got to make the contact and get the playing time. And, you know, really has to earn the playing time. You know, the Royals at least showed that, hey, that, you know, Bonifacio earned his shot and definitely earned a look in spring training and impressed people and then hit well in Omaha and opportunity came up and he took it. So it's good to see.
For sure. So moving on to some more news items.
More transactions. They did all these things this week.
They did all these things. What's next? What do we got next?
Well, let's see. We talked a bit about how getting Danny Duffy back would be kind of like a trade acquisition. They also moved Nate Karns to the 60-day disabled list, but it kind of gives you an idea of the time frame for him, too, to come back from his forearm issue. They moved him to the 60-day.
Was that retroactive to?
Yeah. Yeah, it's from whatever the day that they were out. It's not.
So there's not 60 days from now.
No, yeah. It's from, I think he was out before Duffy even, so.
Yeah, it's like April almost, but not quite.
Yeah, but he just, you know, he hadn't been throwing that much, and it's just, you know, anytime you're in the forearm, You know, you get a little iffy just because elbow issues can sometimes, you know, be prophesied by forearm issues.
We don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, but you know, it doesn't seem like that's an issue. He'll be eligible to come back on July 21st. I haven't read any reports about a potential rehab schedule, but it could be something where, you know, he's starting to do some of that here soon, and then, you know, maybe in August he actually does come back. You know, so if you can get him back too, then that's, you know, he pitched very well when he was healthy, and if he comes back and can regain that form, you've got Duffy and Carnes on top of Kennedy, who seems like he's back to 100%. Maybe Strom, if he can kind of get things going, and Jake Junis has pitched okay. So you've got some of those guys to help round things out. Jason Hamill has pitched well over his last few starts as well. He's been at least more consistent than he was in his first month and a half or so with the Royals. So that's something to look out for too. And then Brian Flynn was activated and optioned to Omaha. That's why, you know, his rehab assignment had finished, so Carnes had to go in the 60 to open up the 40-man spot. Flynn will probably see up at some point. He pitched well last year, but, you know, unfortunately, he was fixing the roof of his barn in spring training and you know, fell through the roof. And well. Yeah, I think he broke a rib and a fracture and a... in his spine somewhere or something. I don't know. Could have been much worse. Shouldn't really chuckle about it. But, I mean, he'll be back at some point, I'm sure. I mean, just in the normal cycle of bullpen arms, he'll come up. So, you know, Carnes, that was one of those kind of, more of a procedural move. You know, it didn't impact the active roster in any way. It was just, you know, kind of the way they had to do it. But, you know, it does kind of give us an idea that, okay, Carnes is still a ways off, but if he can come back, he can be a nice boost for the Royals when, you know, he's able to finish up his rehab schedule whenever it starts.
Yes. So, you know, that, as we talk about, like you mentioned, with Duffy being the, you know, you're essentially kind of got another one for, if you wanted to look at it, as like kind of an addition at the waiver trade deadline almost. It probably, I don't know if it'll be that long before Carnes gets back, but you've got a little bit of some extra that's the word I'm looking for, some extra firepower to add to the lineup or to the rotation at that point. So,
and if it came to it, he could probably pitch out of the bullpen if you've got enough starters pitching well at that point. He pitched into the out of the Mariners' bullpen last year. So, and he's got good stuff, you know, throws hard. He's got a good slider or a good curveball, you know, two really strong pitches that could work out of the bullpen. And the Royals, you know, might be in a position where they have enough starting pitching. And, you know, if it's better for him to come back in that role, then maybe that's what they do. Or maybe they try to get him back full time as a starter and he rejoins the rotation. So, you know, either way, it's a live arm that you get back at a time where you know, if they're in it, they can definitely use the arms.
Yeah, I mean, it's we've talked about it before that too many options is never a bad thing. So if Carnes comes back and maybe Jake Junis or Matt Strom or whoever has really found a groove and is producing at a major league level for this team, then you're like, okay, you know, let's ride this out, and then we can let Carnes go to the bullpen because he's got experience there. And then, or, you know, you can say, well, maybe Junis or Strom has done okay, but just good enough to hold the spot, then you just plug Carnes back in and you can put them in the bullpen, you know. So it's always good to have options, and Carnes having that kind of bullpen and starting experience is definitely going to be valuable down the stretch. So I think best case scenario would be for the Royals to have to make a decision on that regard. You know, yeah. You don't want it to be so obvious, like, okay, there's no way Strom or Junis can take this fifth spot. We got to plug Carnes back in. You want it to be like, okay, should we keep him in or what? But because when Duffy comes out, Strom or Junis, one of them is gone from the rotation. My guess would be Junis is the first to go. And then from there, when Carnes comes back, then it's the decision. And the way Strom has been pitching, it's a pretty easy one at that point where you just plug Carnes back in and you move Strom back to the bullpen. But we'll see. You know, that'll be another one of those other things to keep your eye on. You know, if the Royals are this next, you know, kind of month or so, if they can make some noise, head back, maybe, you know, a month from now they could be in first place in the division. It's that easily attainable. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, I know, if that's the case, and then they get Carnes back, I mean, you got to feel pretty good about heading towards the home stretch with a fully healthy roster and an offense that has seemed to hit its groove.
Five big leaguers.
Yeah. And then, you know, hopefully a lot of the, you know, Herrera, his last couple appearances has seemed like he's kind of settling in a little bit. I don't want to speak too soon, but, you know, hopefully
he's really avoided the slider is the main thing. He's thrown it significantly less than, you know, through that Astros game where he got one out and gave up four runs. Since then, he's really dropped back on using the slider, mostly as like a show pitch or like a chase pitch down and away. And otherwise, it's fastball changeup. And his fastball seems to be ticking up since then, too. So, you know, almost like he had to go back to rely on it and now trust it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe it's just a blip because, I mean, that's only, you know, 2-3 weeks of games, and he, you know, certainly didn't pitch in all of them, and he only pitches one inning at a time. But, yeah, I mean, he hasn't been hit very much and hasn't given up runs since that game. And considering that a lot of the home runs came off of the slider and a lot of the hard contact was on the slider, you know, it makes sense to dial it back, and it makes sense that results would improve when he's not using that pitch.
And I'm not an expert on Dave Island's pitching coach style, but it seems like that's something that an approach Dave Island would take, would be like, hey man, you keep getting nailed on this slider, just cut it.
Let's
just cut it. Yeah.
Doc, it hurts when I do this.
Well, don't do that. So you just cut it out and, you know, get back in your groove, and then you can slowly start bringing it back if you feel like it's something that you need to do. You know, most relievers and closers are just two-pitch pitchers anyway. So the fact that Herrera had more pitches than your average reliever is part of what made him so successful. But another added benefit to that is, well, if one of them's not working, you can still cut one out and you can still have two good ones to rely on. And then if a result of cutting that out is maybe ticking his fastball up a couple extra miles per hour, then hey, you're doing okay, because it's good to see the kind of heat that he's been throwing the last few appearances for him that we hadn't really seen. You know, he's still throwing, you know, mid to upper 90s. So
yeah,
he
was still like 97 on all.
He wasn't like Jared Weaver or anything, but
right.
He that 100 mile an hour type fastball that he was rocking in those World Series teams that you hadn't seen as much, you know, starting to see that crop up a little bit more is exciting stuff. So I mean, if that's what it takes and he gets back in the groove, then definitely it's the right call, and hopefully, you know, with him and, you know, Soria's been having a solid season, and, you know, then if Moylan can get back on track, he seems to have kind of, I don't know if it's like an almost every other outing, like, so he'll come in and look good, and then he'll come in and he'll just get bombed like he did the other night. And it's like,
yeah, he's been in like 38 games, and in like 29 of them, he's given up nothing, and in 9 of them he's been rocked. So
yeah,
it's like,
I mean, he's got like a 6.5 ERA, but then he comes out and you're like, man, this guy looks great. What's going on here? So,
yeah,
you know, hopefully he can develop a little bit more consistency there. And if you get that and, you know, Soria maintains and Herrera gets back in the groove, and then if Duffy and Carnes come back, and then you move, Strom or Junis or whoever one of those into the bullpen, and, you know, you talked about possibility of Flynn if they need him coming back later in the season. I mean, the bullpen, which has been disappointing early on, could come back and end up being a strength by the end of the season if things come out right. So, I mean, the Royals could be, and I've heard, I think it was when I was watching the game last night, they said in talking about, or maybe it was somewhere, I can't remember where else I heard it, but that someone had talked to, you know, just Cleveland media in general and to get their feeling on what Cleveland thinks of the Royals. And they're a little nervous, I think, about the Royals, and they should be, about how well the Royals have been playing lately. So if the Royals are playing this well and Cleveland's worried about them, then especially after this coming weekend, if the Royals can take care of business against Minnesota, and then you've got – they know that Duffy and Carnes are in the pipeline, and then the bullpen starts to get better and this offense continues like it's been going, that's a scary team and one that could easily – no, I shouldn't say easily, but one that definitely could plausibly take the Central Division.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a team that, again, and we've said this last year, we said it this year in previewing the season. I mean, most of the pieces or the significant pieces from the 2015 team, they're all here. You know, they're augmented by, you know, Jason Hamill's been added and Jake Junis has been called up. But, you know, even then you get guys, you look at the bullpen, you're going – Herrera, you've got Soria, you've got Moylan as a righty specialist, you've got Mike Minor, Travis Wood has been pitching better, Scott Alexander's pitching well, Kevin McCarthy, even when he's come up, he's pitched pretty well. And then, you know, they even added Neftali Feliz, who we haven't talked about yet.
Oh, but, I forgot about it, yep.
Yeah, we'll get to him in a sec. Yeah, I mean, if you can get that team where, you know, if you do get Carnes and Duffy back and that moves Strom back into the bullpen, that's another weapon. And it's just a lot of these guys, you know, who have pitched pretty well all season. Well, not all season. Let's not say all season. But in stretches, and especially over the last month or so, that gives you the opportunity to go back and have a pretty deep bullpen, whereas before it really kind of felt like, oh, no, who are we going to turn to? You feel a lot more comfortable with, like, Alexander and Minor. And even Travis Wood, you know, has pitched a little bit better. So, you know, if it comes down to that, then, yeah, you've got options. The defense should still be good. You're finally seeing Alcides Escobar kind of hit a little bit. Alex Gordon has two hits and two RBIs today, plus he's kind of woken up a little bit. If Soler can solidify the DH position, you know, you've got, you know, right field and second base, which have always been problems. Those are kind of figured out right now. You've got the usual suspects in Hosmer, Moustakas, Salvi, Kane. I almost forgot Kane somehow. so there, you know, those guys are there. You know, you've got a good 1-6, but the Royals for so long were batting guys hitting, you know, under 200 or just barely over it in 7, 8, and 9 spots. And now if some of those guys are going to wake up, if they're going to hit about what you expect over the rest of the season, well, now you got an offense that looks pretty decent. You know, dare I say, with the addition of the home run hit, he's maybe even a little scary. So it just kind of comes down to, if you can get that offense to continue to click, you get guys healthy, and you get a lineup that, you know, might have a bunch of 20 home run hitters. It's kind of nice. You know, it's kind of a nice thing to think about that they were able to claw back in. And yeah, you're right. Like you said a couple times in this episode, if they can do some damage against Minnesota, you know, they might put themselves in a real nice position to be going after Cleveland over the next couple months. Because I think hardly anybody believes Minnesota's going to stay in it. Their pitching is just, it's just not good. They got Irvin Santana, they got Jose Berrios, and that's about it right now. Their bullpen's okay, but, yeah, it's just, meh.
Yeah, and it feels an awful lot like that 2015 Twins team that just didn't quite have it down the stretch to really compete. Like, they're it's not like they're going to just tank and all of a sudden lose 95 games. Like, they're going to be, you know, kind of around, but I agree. I think they're going to start to fade. And where they are now, right around that 500 mark, you know, within a game or two, either way, is probably where I would imagine they kind of stay the rest of the season. It'll just be, can the Royals do enough to blow past them and start looking up at Cleveland and saying, you're next? And you know, again, this weekend, so important. Just, it's got to, I mean, it's in Kansas City. It's going to be, especially if they can take care of business these next two games and beat Detroit. You know, they're off to a good start tonight, but if they can hold on to win this game and then win tomorrow and then four games, it's going to be like a playoff atmosphere out there at the K. Everyone hates the Twins anyway. So
right. Just don't let them in our stadium.
Exactly. Having a possibility of taking them out of second place and putting that, because a team like the Twins, it feels like some of those Royals teams in the pre-2010 era that, you know, there's one or two that maybe got off to a good start, you know, your 03 team, your 09 team, and people were like, hey, maybe this could happen, and then they start sliding down the division ladder, and once every time they'd get passed by a team, they just weren't able to get back above them. So, you know, I don't feel like I'm talking too much trash on the Twins, though I don't really care if I did. I want to talk a lot of trash on the Twins, but that's just how I kind of feel this is going to play out for them. And, you know, I think in the coming years, especially if they make the right moves and maybe get some more development from their farm system, they could be much better.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't know
that
that's...
They've got the pieces. Like, Kepler's good. Sano is good. Buxton's probably going to end up being pretty good.
Yep.
You know, I mean, that's a pretty good trio to just bank on right there. It's just they do need more. Nick Gordon's in their system. He's good. So, I mean, we'll see. I'm not worried about him yet.
No.
I'm definitely not worried about him this year, but...
No.
They've also handed the Royals their lunch this year, so
that's true.
Maybe
so
I should.
This has to be, but that's just, you know, hopefully that just provides extra motivation for this weekend for the Royals to really get hyped up and say, "Yeah, I'm." The Royals spent an entire season that ended in them winning a World Series, thinking that everyone thought they were bad.
Right.
So if that's what it takes,
spite is a motivator.
Exactly, I'm totally on board with that. I don't even care. So what else we got? We got, you mentioned Neftali Feliz.
Yeah.
We hadn't really talked about him. So
we got our wish list.
Yep. If you recall, and I don't say you, obviously you recall, but to the listeners, if you guys recall, Mike and I were talking about, and I believe Neftali Feliz was the one crossover we had, wasn't it, on our off-season wish list? Or
uh-huh.
Was that, yeah. So we both had him, as the one of the main ones that we wanted to see the Royals bring in. He ended up going to Milwaukee, and the Brewers released him. Now, if normally you think, oh, man, the Brewers don't even want him, what the hell are the Royals doing? But the Brewers are in first place right now, so they're actually competing. And, you know, Feliz wasn't doing it for him, so they let him go, and the Royals picked him up. And it's very recent, so he's had two appearances, he's pitched two innings, given up one run, looked okay, and, you know, hopefully, and hearing, I think it was Ned Yost that I heard talk about the acquisition of Feliz, or maybe it was Dayton Marsh, somebody in the, God, I cannot remember now who it was, but talking about how in conversing with Dave Island and knowing what they know about Feliz, they thought there were some tweaks that he could make with the Royals that would allow him to have better success than he did at Milwaukee. So typically we've kind of talked about that in the past when they've made acquisitions of pitchers that you maybe scratch your head a little bit, that You know, Dave Island's very involved in that process in terms of acquisitions, and he's very good at being able to identify small little tweaks that can be made to allow a pitcher to have some success. And, you know, even if it's in the short term, you know, I think you give him credit for some of what Jeremy Guthrie accomplished when he had some good stints. And then, you know, same with Chris Young. And, I mean, Jason Vargas, who, you know, he missed the season with Tommy John, but, you know, his like a season and a half, really. But I mean, his tenure with the Royals has been pretty dang solid.
Yeah.
And I think you got to give Island some credit for that as well. So, you know, and then all the relievers that we've seen come through, whether it's, you know, Ryan Madsen, who went on to sign a big contract, or whether it's Peter Moylan, who we talked about has had some issues this year, but, you know, last year had a really good season, and, you know, has had some bright moments this year and those types of things. So, you know, if that's where they're coming from, where they say, okay, we've identified what his problem is, we think we can fix it, and we think he can give us some valuable innings, then I'm on board. You know, I think he had a good season last year, and, you know, he's had 2015, he had some struggles. I pulled up his stats here, but, you know, 2015 was the worst year he had. All the years before that, he was very good on a lot of those really good Texas teams. And then he, you know, last year he had a solid season as a reliever for Pittsburgh. And then, you know, he's had some struggles this year. So hopefully the Royals can get him back on track. And this just adds kind of another feather in the cap, if you will, if he can get going as they, you know, head towards the second half of the season, then just contributes to the Royals being seen as an even more dangerous team.
Yeah. I mean, the main struggles for him, you know, we talked about Herrera and the slider. The slider for Feliz has been great. You know, nobody's really hitting it hard. I think there's like a 350 slugging against it. But the fastball is getting hammered. So if you just combine the two, they'd be almost unhittable.
The perfect pitcher.
But if there is, you know, he's still throwing, he threw about 96 last year. He's still throwing 96 on the fastball this year. If there is something that Island can find, well, you might have gone out and found yourself a nice little bargain in the middle of the season. And because Feliz was released, completely released by Milwaukee, you know, he's making $5.4 million this year, but the Royals are really going to only pay about half of that if he stays on the team the whole year, because Milwaukee will have to cover the rest. So that's not too bad. You know, it gives you the opportunity to cut bait really quickly if things just don't work. You're not sitting there wondering, well, you know, is this a sunk cost, or do we want to try to still get something out of our investment? It's just like, you know, that can be a question that, hey, look at Brandon Moss. They've got a lot of money and an extra year tied into him. They can't really do anything about him. But Feliz, if he struggles and continues to give up home runs and continues to walk guys, well, then, yeah, you can just walk away from him. You walk away, you call up Brian Flynn, and you say, well, we tried. That's all you got to do.
Yep.
You know, but if he figures it out, this is a guy who used to be a closer, like elite level closer with Texas, you know, rookie of the year. I believe he won the rookie of the year. He was at least a finalist.
I got his stats, you know, here. I can tell you. He won rookie of the year in 2010, and he was an all-star that year.
Yeah. Like, I mean, a number one overall prospect at different points. I mean, this is a talented guy with a lot of great stuff.
Don't want to interrupt, but just to give some context, I mean, 2009, he had a 1.74 ERA in 31 innings. He had 69 innings in 2010, 2.73, 62 innings 2011, 2.74, 42 innings in 2012, 3.16, and then 31 innings in 2014 with a 1.99 ERA.
Sorry.
So, yeah, you know, he did pretty well. And,
yeah,
you know, he had 40 saves in 2010 and 32 saves in 2011. So he's had some pretty good seasons. I didn't want to interrupt. I just wanted to give some context.
It was 2011, the year that Texas went to the World Series.
Yes, that was the year they had that epic Game 6 loss to the Cardinals.
Stupid Cardinals.
Which I'd have to go, but I'd have to go back and look. But he definitely had a part in that, because they were one pitch away,
yeah,
twice.
Oh, Nelson Cruz.
Nelson Cruz.
Ah, yeah. So I like Feliz. I mean, they're going to start him out in, like, you know, low leverage spots. You know, probably not going to be asking him to hold a lead for a while. If he comes out and strings together four or five appearances where he's really strong, yeah, they could. But, I mean, you've already got Herrera, Soria, Mike Minor, Scott Alexander. So, you know, if he never gets out of middle relief, that's probably okay, too. You've got plenty of arms that can handle it. The only downside, and I say downside out of sentiment, the only downside to Feliz is that the Royals had to part ways with Chris Young, who did not pitch well this year.
No.
Really only was the guy that they asked to get a bunch of outs when they were already out of a game. So, you know, he did luck into, like, two starts where he gave up five runs in, like, four innings, and the Royals still won the game a couple times. But, you know, just didn't pitch well this year, didn't pitch that well last year. The second year on his contract was probably a mistake. They did end up releasing him. So while I did talk about the benefit of adding Feliz and you're only paying him the prorated league minimum, well, you know, Chris Young, you're going to be paying his full salary less whatever team picks him up, you know, ends up paying him for their league minimum. So you basically break even, though. Chris Young was making $5.75 million this year, so $350,000 more than Feliz. There is a buyout for next year that the Royals will have to pay, but like $1.5 million, it's, you know, it counts, not really a lot.
In baseball terms, it's nothing.
Yeah, not when it's the right move to move on from a guy. But, you know, Chris Young, he pitched so well in 2015, was a key part of that team.
They don't win the World Series without
Chris Young. They don't. I remember that game four in Toronto where I was terrified that he was starting because Toronto that year seemed to hit everybody. And he gave him four good innings and got him through. And, I mean, the Royals scored like 14 in that game, so
right.
Kind of easy. But, I mean, it's not like he didn't get hit that hard either. He gave up like two runs and it was like, that's perfectly fine. He had, three innings and extra innings in game one of the World Series. Huge. Yep. Struck out like seven guys. Just was awesome. And then like 2 days later,
it was like him and Bartolo Colon, these mm-hmm. old soft tossers right. who were just destroying everybody for keeping this game into extras. That
yeah.
was hilarious.
And then, you know, a couple days later, he makes his start anyway in New York and goes like four innings in that game. The Royals ended up winning that game and, you know, ended up winning game five in the World Series. And so, you know, he definitely had a huge part in that season. And you know, over the course of the year, he had, 20-some starts, 24 starts or something, and like a 3.3 ERA. I mean, he was pretty good. And,
yep.
you know, he was definitely a big part of that team. And, you know, it's totally reasonable to see why the Royals would bring him back for 2016. I think by the middle of 2016, we kind of recognized that, okay, 2017 is probably going to be a problem. Yeah. But, you know, it is still kind of, you know, I think at this point, you know, anytime any player leaves that was on that 2015 team, it's a little bittersweet just because, you know, that was the team. That was the team that won it. And, you know, there's always going to be in highlights and memories that group. And, you know, so that's a bummer. But I hear he's still trying to find a team to latch on to. So hopefully he does and, you know, pitches well enough to kind of stick around, but not well enough to, like, put the Royals out of contention or help a team that might put the Royals out of contention.
Yeah. As long as it's not against us, I'll root for him.
Right. Yeah.
So that's kind of the major transactional news, and kind of in the course of it all, we've really kind of talked about the just what the Royals have done and been able to do, and how important this next stretch is. I mean, is there anything we're leaving out at this point? I mean, there's probably a couple more transactions that aren't huge that I'm forgetting off the top of my head, but
I don't think so.
Or did we cover them all? Okay,
I think we covered everything. That I wrote down, at least. If we miss something, well, I guess we'll get it next week.
Yeah. So, well, hey, we're off to a good start because we're about to end the recording and the Royals are still in the lead, though they have given up a couple runs at this point.
Oh, God,
hopefully,
oh God.
Yes,
oh,
get
no.
off.
Oh, no.
So hopefully we can the Royals can keep this going. They'll put themselves back to 500 if they can hold on and win this game. And then they can hopefully win tomorrow. And, man, I'm pumped for this weekend. Unfortunately, unfortunately, in terms of watching Royals games, but I'll be out of town on vacation. So the fortunate part is I'll be out on vacation.
Sure.
I'm going to Colorado, so that'll be fun. But hopefully they'll be able to take care of business this weekend. Then it's going to be nuts out at the K. If you can make it out there this weekend, definitely go out there. The Royals are going to need all the support. It's only going to contribute to the atmosphere, and it's going to make it just like, God, I would love nothing more than to just rock the Twins for four straight games and just send it there. Because I remember it was 2011, maybe, and the Royals were like just a couple games under 500, and we were like, hey, maybe this things are starting to turn around, and had a four-game series against the Twins about this time of the year, actually. I want to say they were like 35 and 39, and they had just won like four or five games in a row or something, and it was a very, very similar scenario, except they were, hadn't won a World Series, of course, but I think they just got swept by four games by the Twins, and then it was over after that. They ended up losing 90+. So hopefully that can happen in reverse this time, and the Royals can rock the Twins for a four-game series, and they can, try and find their way the rest of the season while the Royals cruise a little bit more. So let's hope that's the case. We will find out. We will know this time next week when we record. So the season could have just next week. I mean, it could be two entirely in different shows. There's two possible timelines here where we're really talking, making a run at this division in playoffs, or we're talking trades and who to sell to and what their values might be. So hopefully it's the former, not the latter. But we'll see. We'll be here. We'll talk about it either way. Thank you all so much for listening. Of course, we couldn't do it without you. Be sure to visit our sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn. Always a good time. Things are, July 4th weekend. I'm sure there's probably going to be a lot of people in town. A lot of people are going to want to go out, have fun, go to Westport. Kelly's is your place. Definitely make sure you go there. Always pumping out quality hashtag content at bpkansascity.com. So be sure to visit BP Kansas City.
Including Clint Scholes just put out updated post-draft prospect rankings.
Yes, very good stuff.
Interesting stuff there.
Absolutely. Clint has been killing it lately, as the kids say, with the draft and farm system coverage that Clint's been doing. It's always great, but with the draft, there's been just more content to put out there because of all the new players in the system and such. So definitely go out there and check out everything he's done. Lots of good information. And of course, all our other writers just putting out daily multiple things per day. So be sure to check out BP Kansas City and go visit Kelly's. Until next time, of course, we'll see you next week. Thank you all so much for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. the waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
Oh, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Libidotosis.
Yep.
All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.